This is WABF, and it's time now for the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Luke Campomenosi of the Common Sense Campaign and adjunct professor of Spring Hill College. This program is paid for by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne on 98 and in Malbus on 181 with a state-of-the-art car wash. And due to an anonymous sponsor, you are now extending your show until 11 a.m.
You just stole my thunder.
Oh, no. I thought I should announce it for you.
Well, you did. Well, Lori, good morning. Another morning. Monday. Okay, so here we are. But since Lori just gave the cat out of the bag, okay, let the cat out of the bag. Yes, it's true. We have a full hour, and this works out nicely for a whole number of reasons, particularly since today I've got two candidates, and I've heard Lori explaining that earlier. Two candidates for the coming election, both of whom are on the ballot in November. One for governor, Dr. Jimmy Blake, and one for U.S. Senate, Dr. John Sophocles. So they're going to be on in a few minutes, and we'll have a good full hour to talk to them about, you know, their views about issues, what's going on, how they became libertarians, why they did that, and what are the main issues that they have. And I think it's important for us to look at this. Now, let me just put this into context. I sent an email out to our Common Sense Campaign people last week, and I basically said, who is going to vote for Ivy and who's going to vote for Britt? And I said, no one that I know of, okay? So it seems to me that rather than waste a vote on a write-in, which, again, we've tried to get money to do write-in, you know, campaign for Mo Brooks and Tim James. That just wasn't there. So if there's no money to do anything, what are the alternatives? What's the recourse? Yes, you can do a write-in, but it's really not going to go anywhere. So why not take a look at these libertarian candidates, one of whom I've known for over a dozen years, and another that I've just met, Dr. Blake, who's running for governor. And it seems to me that both of them represent the kinds of people that we would want in leadership positions, okay? So back to the original premise. If you're not voting for Ivy, why are you not voting for her? Because of all the stuff that she's done and the inability of her to be an effective governor, just being a rhino, whatever the cause is for you, I would argue that you need to take a close look at Dr. Blake for governor and Dr. Sophocles for the U.S. Senate. Both of them are on the ballot, okay?
Okay.
And that makes a big difference.
Will you ask them what the Libertarian Party stands for, represents? What's the definition? We've got Republican, we've got Democrat.
You
see,
this is what Lori does. She throws this out to me.
I interview people for a living.
I know. She does interview. Maybe I'll just let you do the interview.
No, I'll just
turn
the microphone off and let you do your thing.
All right. So at any rate, that's where it is. So they're going to be calling in a few minutes. And before they do, I want to be able to just kind of talk a little bit about last week's news because, again, we've had this major hurricane. And again, as someone who lost our home at Katrina, I understand what these folks are going through. Okay. It is devastating. Now, the good thing with us in Katrina was we had insurance that took care of things. I saw yesterday on the news that there are lots of people in Florida that did not have water insurance, okay? And let's be clear about this. For Katrina, the insurance people said, well, is it water or is it wind? And they tried to beat you because they didn't want to pay. And that is a fact that you cannot get away from, okay? Now, in this particular case, though, if you didn't have insurance, it is going to be a major problem for you to get back on your feet. There's no question about that. I will say this, from a political perspective, DeSantis has done a great job down there handling this. They didn't want him to have any success with this. I mean, they want him gone, and they want him off the national stage as well. But he has kicked some butt, and I think it's important that he survives this. So from that standpoint, in terms of the hurricane, yes, a major hurricane, terrible in its consequence, probably the most expensive, destructive number that you've seen. But I do think that that DeSantis and those folks down in Florida will get through this in one piece. Now, in terms of the things that we were talking about on the last show, you know, we were talking about Putin and the possibility he was going to annex those areas of Ukraine that that he has wanted. Well, that has taken place. Now, what this does to the whole dynamic down there, in my view, is it creates a situation where not only, as I said last week, he has a major political problem because they are losing this war, okay? And despite the fact that they annexed these territories this past week, they just lost another city, okay? So what is he going to do if the Ukrainians are starting to take back this area that he has annexed, which is now supposedly Ruskyville, okay? And I'm just telling you, he's already said he will use nuclear weapons. He's threatened it. He says he's not bluffing. Well, what the hell happens if he does use it against the Ukrainian forces trying to recover their own territory? What's next? Do we go up the escalation, the nuclear escalation ladder? I don't think so, and I've said this last week, and I'll reinforce it. If he does use the nuke, all we need to do is just ratchet up the conventional forces that will kick his ass even further. That's what we need to do, okay? So we'll see what happens this week. Stand by if they start nuking Washington and all like that. Well, I'm joking about it, but the fact of the matter is, who the hell knows? Biden is incompetent, you know? He's saying hello to a House member who has already passed away. And then that idiot Harris is talking about our great that great treaty that we have with North Korea. Oops there, Camilla. It's South Korea. You know, get it. Okay, all right. This is time
calm
for a show
down
next time, and I'll quit ranting. All right. So, Laurie tells me that we have our guests on the line. Hello, Dr. Blake.
Good morning, Lou. How are you doing?
Good morning. And I know John is about right there, too. Hello, John Sophocles.
Good morning.
All right. So the game plan this morning is I'm going to take Dr. Blake first, and we'll let him go through his paces, and then I'll talk to you, John, about your run for the Senate race. Okay, so if we do it that way, I think the audience will have clear picture of who is who and what you all both are running on, okay? So
very well.
All right, so Jimmy, I won't call you Dr. Blake, okay? Let me just do it informally, okay? Let's take just a few minutes to give everyone your background, who you are, where you're from, what you've done, things like that, and then we'll get into the more serious questions about libertarian theory and what your key issues will be as governor, okay?
Sounds good.
All right. So, take it.
Oh, okay. I grew up in Auburn. My dad was a professor there and very involved in Little League and Boy Scouts and all that kind of business. Finished at Auburn High School, Auburn University, went to the University of Alabama in Birmingham to medical school. After an internship, went into the U.S. Air Force, where I was a flight surgeon in an F-4 squadron, had a wonderful time, got several hundred hours in the backseat of a F-4 Phantom jet, loved it, and then came back to Birmingham and started a group, a chain of extended hour family practices, practiced family medicine for a number of years with some emergency room medicine. I've been a libertarian since the party was founded after Nixon closed the gold window and put on wage and price controls, and the party was founded in 74, I think that was. I was chairman of the Alabama Libertarian Party when I was elected to the Birmingham City Council in the early 90s. I served two terms, stepped down after that because I had said I had committed to no more than two terms. Went there basically to bring down a 20-year standing political machine. And, you know, my first 4 years, most of the votes were 8-1, but we were throwing a grenade over the fence pretty much at every meeting and basically shining the light on what was going on to the population in Birmingham. And it worked. After the first 4 years, I helped run six campaigns. We won four of them, so the council then became a 5-4. We were still in the minority, but in a much better position. And then finally, after Mayor Arrington lost a vote that we had on the waterworks, and I led the opposition to a countywide sales tax that was going to build a dome stadium that, frankly, the entire legislature, Republican and Democrat, had signed off on this tax thing. So had all of the county commission, all the newspapers, all the radio stations. But I said no. I called it Dome and Domer, and led the opposition for about 6 months, a very active campaign. And despite the fact that the other side spent $1.5 million and we spent about $35,000, we won that overwhelmingly with over 62% of the vote in our favor. So, you know, I think that's the most significant thing I've done politically, because to this day, the taxpayers in the Birmingham area have saved over $75 million each year, and that's in 1998 dollars. So
right.
That's billions of dollars that taxpayers are saved because I said no when everybody else said yes.
Well, you know, I think it's interesting that you mentioned that you have this anti-corruption, you know, history. And given what many of us feel is the high degree of corruption in the fact that you have the Business Council of Alabama, you've got A+, you've got, you know, other bureaucratic entities that are all part of the same system, that the degree of corruption today in terms of preventing any kind of positive legislation that would make sense to the population is absolutely thwarted. So whether it's Common Core, whether it's health freedom issues like protecting individuals from the jab, things along those lines seem to, I would argue, be issues that you would be very well supportive of dealing with. I mean, tell us about how you would feel about those two particular issues, and then just expand on what exactly your issues are that you have going forward in a positive sense if you become governor.
Well, Lou, you're so right. I mean, we've got so many issues here in Alabama. You know, I was listening in before the show, and of course, you were talking about Ukraine, and there's so much nuttiness going on at the national level. You know, the politicians in Alabama want you to be focused on international events. They want you to be focused on the insanity that's going on in Washington. They don't want you to be focused on what's going on here in Alabama. Alabama is a conservative state, socially and fiscally conservative. Most of the folks out there that are voting Republican are really small government people who want less government, more freedom. And yet, with a supermajority Republican legislature, spending during Kay Ivey's administration has gone up 35% since 2019, more than California. It's gone up more than New York. Our legislature acts like they're running a highly profitable business for their own benefit and the benefit of the people who are feeding them. And you mentioned a number of those organizations. So, you know, we're not going to be competitive in Alabama if we continue to go down this road. Florida doesn't have an income tax. Tennessee doesn't have an income tax. Mississippi's phasing theirs out. Georgia gave significant tax reduction in this last recession. And our folks didn't do anything but pass a gas tax. My principal issue, if I go there, will be to take the tax burden off the people of Alabama. I believe that we must, if we're going to be competitive, is get rid of the Alabama income tax. And that will be my principal objective. In addition to that, we've got 374, maybe more, boards that are out there regulating. I call it, you know, they claim that whatever they're doing is for the public safety and the public good. Yeah, right. It's public safety for profit for those people that are running those boards. If it were up to me, I'd abolish all 374 of them and let people make their own decisions about who they do business with and how they do business and get the barriers out of the way. of people who want to start businesses and participate in the economy. We've lost the ability for upward mobility because we put so many obstacles in the way of people getting ahead in Alabama, and it's all been done. I mean, Lou, I will just tell you, the same big mules that used to run the state of Alabama wearing the blue Democrat jersey are now running the state of Alabama running the Republican jersey. And people, you know, one of the biggest obstacles that we as libertarians have is people say, oh, well, it's a wasted vote if you vote libertarian. Well, this time, you know, there's so much I want to say, Lou, I apologize if I just run on.
It's okay. We all get into these rants.
Keep doing what you've been doing, you're going to continue to get what you've been getting. And it's time for people to recognize they need to send a message to the politicians in Montgomery that we're tired of it. And the best way to do that I can think of is to vote for the Libertarian Party candidates.
Well, let me ask you this. On the issue of taxation, I understand what you're saying. But other issues that we have really focused on and again, gas tax issues, that's all part and parcel of what the conservative, you know, argument has been, you know. But let me just ask you this. In terms of education, we have tried since Common Core was enacted in 2010 by Rhino Governor Riley, okay, to get rid of it.
Huge amount of money out of it.
Yeah, okay. So we have had no success. And so the argument from our perspective is that not only is Common Core destructive of our children's education, and we're now rated 52nd in math and 48th in ELA, English Language Arts, whereas before Common Core was enacted, we were 25th in the nation, okay? And from 2003 to 2010, we were in an absolute upwards, you know, moving upward in every particular way. And it would cross racial lines. Everyone was doing better, okay?
Lou,
so, I mean, this is the argument that we would make to you, Jimmy, that this is something that you have got to do on day one. We're going to get rid of Common Core. You, as president of the school board, you get what you have to do, pass those resolutions. And we have resolutions that we sent up there. But good old Kay Ivey, you know, she can't dare cross the BCA and do what's right for the kids. Oh, no. Keep that damn money coming
AEA
in.
AEA and the BCA both are huge problems. Lou, you're absolutely right about all of that, except I think you're being overly generous. I think we're closer to 52 in math, not whatever you said.
No, I said 52nd.
Let me speak to it a minute. Yeah. We were 26th or 25th in math when the Republican majority took over the legislature. I don't care what they tell you, we do still have the same Common Core baloney going on in our schools right now.
Right.
If it were up to me, we would not be involved with the federal government in education at all. We should abolish the, you know, the Republicans used to call for abolishing the federal Department of Education.
Right.
It is totally unconstitutional. Education should strictly be done at the state level. And you know, I'm a huge, we've got to bring market forces to bear to schools if we want to see improvement. So we need school choice. We need vouchers. We need more homeschooling, support for homeschooling. Look, the whole government school system is in place to make us good subjects and to make us forget that we are sovereign citizens. That's the real rot of the government school system right there, and that's what we need to focus on as well.
Okay.
And Governor, I can assure you education will be right up at the top.
Okay, and to that point about, you know, what is really going on inside the schools, aside from Common Core, in 2015 there was an attempt to institute a new counseling policy, okay? And this counseling program had come out of the National Association of School Boards, okay? The common sense approach to schooling, as you've just suggested, you know, ran up against this new policy. And all this policy was going to do was to indoctrinate children in what we now know today as the far left progressive approach, the woke approach. Okay, hate America, we're racist, homophobic, all the rest of it. Okay, and we found out about that, and we thought it had been stopped. Colonel Mike Parsons, you may know him from the Tea Party up there in Huntsville. Mike found out about it, and it looked as though we had stopped it. A few months later, we found out that Dr. Bice, who was then the superintendent, had written to the Department of Education in Washington that they had implemented the full board of everything that they had wanted in this national association. And this is where what we have now discovered, and the documentation is there, and Mike Parsons can give it to you and you'll have all you need. But the point is, this insidious indoctrination is going on. So if you saw what happened last week in Virginia, they had students protesting about the pronoun issue in Virginia. All of that comes out of the curriculum that they are being given that basically says you have got to take action. You are, you know, you can't put up with anything that's going on with normal approaches. And I would argue that this is one of the things that we in the conservative movement have not been able to ignite people down here about the dangers of it. And I would think that as you progress in your campaign, that this is something that yes, it's 52nd and 48th, but the real question is, what's going on with sex education with these kids? What's going on with sexualization? What's going on with transgenderism? And
we need to do the same thing in Alabama that the parents in Virginia did. Parents must get involved. They must go to school board meetings. They need to ask the right questions. And frankly, the education of children is their parents' responsibility, and they should have all the authority as it relates to those issues. And I encourage people to look for alternatives to government schools until we can do something to get the indoctrination, as you call it. And whether it's about all these woke issues, or the one that's really bothering me and the one that's destroying our country, is that our children are not being taught the Constitution anymore. They're not being taught the things that we used to be taught in college, in high school, right, about, you know, the rights of individuals and what being a citizen is, as opposed to now being a subject. And that's the direction that the government education is pushing our children, is to be good, non-questioning subjects. Don't think, don't teach them to think. It's an outrageous thing, and there's no issue more important than that, because that's going to determine the direction of our country and whether we can even come close to remaining close to a free country, because we're certainly not the freest country in the world anymore.
Well, that's exactly spot on. Let me take you down to something that's a little bit, you know, more mundane, but nevertheless important to the folks down here in South Alabama. That's this I-10 bridge project. Now, our argument here has always been, it started with the $6 toll, which the people got their pitchforks out and they destroyed Kay Ivey's $6 toll plan. Okay, thank you to the MPOs here and in Mobile. Okay, now we're into a situation where we know that there's a real need for this bridge, okay, or whatever, okay, but however they come up with an engineering plan, we need it. They've managed to bring the toll back down to $2.50. Common Sense Campaign has pretty much supported this, because at least they're talking about a sunset of 20 years on the toll, okay? Now, again, some people are no tollers forever, but if the choice is going to be a bridge with a $2.50 toll that you can actually get, you know, a cheap pass on, which takes it under $2.50, then fine, okay? But the real issue is the financing. And Ivy and them have managed to create what I've characterized as a house of cards financial approach to this. The state is supposed to kick in $250 million, but they're relying on a $1 billion grant from the feds. Now, that bond grant, I mean, excuse me, not a grant, it's a $1 billion bond. we found out that the prison bond, which is another issue we can talk about, but the prison bond was for $800 million, and they only got $520 million. So here's your dilemma, Jimmy. If you end up as the governor and you've got to deal with this bridge problem, and you do have a problem with it because the Bayway, which you've driven over, probably has about 15 years left to go on its lifespan. And remember what happened in Birmingham. The bridge up there started falling apart. They had to throw $800 million at it to fix it quickly. So we want to avoid that kind of a crisis. And the crisis will kill the Alabama budget because we bring in $2 billion every year from Gulf Shores and Orange Beach. So my point here is, as you think through bridges and important, you know, decisions to be made about where to place the money, if there is a financial problem with building this bridge, are you going to be willing to try to do everything you can to build up and send more Alabama money at whatever level, maybe it's $500 million, or whatever, in order to get this bridge done before it's too late?
Well, Lou, I'm not as knowledgeable. I'm clearly not as knowledgeable on the financing of the bridge as you are. Libertarians have traditionally felt that user fees, whether you want to call them or tolls or whatever, are not inappropriate for specific purposes. But that bridge is a bridge that, you know, really is a federal highway. It impacts not only Mobile and Baldwin County, but impacts the entire state of Alabama. And you've already mentioned about the economy of Mobile and Baldwin County. So it is a critically important issue to the state, and the state needs to be proactive, as you point out. Concrete steel bridges have a limited lifespan, and we don't need it to fall in the drink before we start addressing the issue and start rebuilding it. My concern with the bridge and in fact the whole highway, you know, we just increased the gas tax 10 cents in Alabama. I'm afraid that my view is that is a gimme to the big highway builders and the special interest contractors and all that sort of stuff. Anything we should do needs to be transparent. It needs to be such that anybody can bid on it. It doesn't need to be about politicians picking their favorites in terms of how to address the issue. I don't have an answer to it right now because I haven't studied it. And frankly, you know, that's something that a real honest group of engineers needs to address, and not just those that are picked because of their political connections, which I fear is what's been going on. Before we get off the radio, Lou, I sure wish we would talk a little bit about this COVID hysteria and the pandemic and the way our state and leaders reacted to it.
Yeah, I think that was one of going to be my next question in terms of, you know, your sense of, you know, what should have been done and what was done. And again, it comes back to health freedom issues, which this governor has not been very supportive of protecting individual citizens from being forced to take the jab, you know, along with Dr. Harris. And again, one of the things that the Alabama Conservative Coalition is pushing for is to have Dr. Harris's, you know, position as director of public health being appointed a position by the governor and confirmed by the Senate, as other you know positions are. And so let's just go ahead and take that as a concluding issue, and then I'll give you a couple of minutes to summarize things. Okay, Jim?
Sounds great.
Okay.
Well, first of all, there's no question. We cannot have unelected, unaccountable people who have the kind of power to actually demand that we wear a mask, that we close small businesses, that we close churches, that we stand 6 feet apart and all that business that went on here. And, you know, the governor's job, the principal job of the government, and I'm going to read, and John's probably going to read it as well because we both live by this. You know, Section 35 of the Constitution of the state of Alabama says that the sole object and only legitimate end of government is to protect the citizens in the enjoyment of life, liberty, and property. And when the government assumes other functions, it is usurpation and oppression. the bottom line is the governor's job should have been to protect the people of this state from the federal overreach that relates to this pandemic. I mean, they lied to us on every issue. We know it now. We know they said that the immunization was 94 or 96% effective. We now know that it's really inappropriate to even call it an immunization because it doesn't give you immunity from the disease. We also know that it's not safe. And the best evidence that you could possibly ask of that is that Congress in Washington gave Pfizer and Moderna and anybody who participated in sticking that stuff in people total immunity from civil liability. We've never done that, in my judgment, to any other company ever. The common law, our legal traditions are that if you commit a tort, if you hurt somebody, if you're fraudulent and you're dealing with other people, that you should be held accountable. But, you know, the best evidence that they have not told us the truth is that they want to censor us in terms of being able to talk about it. Doctors lost their licenses if they wanted to treat people with drugs that we knew that A, were unequivocally safe, and there was evidence that they would be helpful under the circumstances. They would not allow that to happen. You had to have Pfizer's or Moderna's injection. Those companies made billions of dollars. They have created damage in the tens of billions of dollars in terms of health care costs in the future, and they've not been held accountable. And then our governor, Kay Ivey, stood up, called it a pandemic of the unvaccinated and tried to shame the people of Alabama who didn't want to take a dangerous experimental shot. I mean, outrageous. And the medical profession and how they behave, that's, again, one of those special interest boards that needs to go.
Exactly. Well, Jimmy, I've had you on for almost the half an hour here, so I need to give Dr. John Sophocles some time. So can you just
now you're gonna get the bright star in the group.
I'll
turn him loose.
How can people get in touch with you to support you?
Thank you so much for your time, and you know, there is an incredibly good option to electing a lobbyist to the U.S. Senate, and it is John Sophocles. He's got the mic.
Okay. Thank you very much, Jimmy. Appreciate it.
Hey, Lou.
Good morning there, Dr. Sophocles. How are you doing?
Good morning. You keep trying to give me that promotion, Lou. I'm just a lowly instructor.
Okay. All right. Well, listen, let's. Can you give us, like I did with Jimmy, get some background so that people have a little bit better understanding of where you've been, where you're, what your background is, and then we'll get into some questions about policies, okay?
Sure. I've been a longtime columnist for the Alabama Gazette, 13 years. So if you want to go to the Alabama Gazette website, you can see I'm a pretty open book. As you recall, Lou, I've written about your efforts a couple times in my columns. And I guess more about myself in the longer term, I was a warranty and policy administrator for Ford Motor Company for about a decade. And made enough money to take my vow of poverty and teach. I taught at Clemson and came to Auburn in 1992 because it was a strong small government economics program, and there was the Von Mises Institute there, which was a draw. Unfortunately, the Republicans didn't like us small government folks down there, so people weren't getting rehired and kind of persecuted against. And one of our stars there was Professor Mark Thornton, and when they didn't rehire him, no one else had the courage besides the lowly, nobody, untenured instructor to take the faculty position for the student group. So I agreed to be the faculty advisor, and I said, don't ask me to be the advisor if we're not going to do things. And so the first thing that came up was a special election. So I said, okay, students, we're going to do some politicking here and learn how the system works. We got our signatures, got on the ballot for a special election, Alabama House seat. Lo and behold, who was the only person that lived in that highly gerrymandered district? You're hearing him on the radio. Well, that's how I became a candidate the first time. I can really got active in with you and some of the other folks and Eubank, John Rice, with the Stop the Common Core. Yeah. It's something that's close to my heart. For listeners that, you know, really don't know much about how things progress, especially in college, I like to teach introduction classes, so I taught mostly freshmen and sophomores. Lou, as you know, I've told you, it's terrifying to watch the decay of what's come out of government schools. And I'm talking about just simple things like having to do a percent and writing a complete sentence, you know, using words properly. And one of the things that was required reading in my class was a copy of the U.S. Constitution. They would have to read it, often come back for a quiz to show they had read it, and not use the words they thought were apropos, but the ones that were actually there.
Mm-hmm.
It was always surprising to have students come after class, or usually at the end, it would often be a military type, and say, you know, this is the first class I've ever been forced to read the Constitution, right, the document that I took an oath to uphold and defend. And that's something I've championed a lot in my life. I've actually taken some to the United States Supreme Court and won unanimously in 2005 to have it be kicked down to then not be heard 5 years later. So the Constitution is a document that's near and dear to my heart. I think it's an outstanding, well-done document that needs to be followed, and the folks that don't, if they can't discipline them at the ballot box, need to be disciplined in the courts.
Well, John, thank you for that good introduction, the background, and yes, we have been in a fight against Common Core for a long, long time. So let's transition now to the fact of the matter is you're running against Katie Britt, who we have characterized as a rhino, which means essentially that if you're happy with Shelby and Shelby approaches, then that's what you're going to get. Mo Brooks was the candidate of our choice, and he certainly was a diametrically opposed to everything that I would argue that Katie Britt stands for. So given that, can you just kind of give us a picture of the key issues that you have if you are going to go to the Senate? And our argument here is that there is recourse here, that we can, in fact, send a conservative constitutionalist to the Senate if they vote for you.
Indeed. And the last time I spoke with Mo, I was sitting next to him at the Republican Assembly up in Tuscaloosa. He got the strongest endorsement. But remember, the Republican Assembly is small government types. They're not the Republican Party. I mean, the Republican Party has been the party of big government, gave you the first income tax, corporate welfare, all that other neat stuff, wealth transfers.
Right.
And it's really hard to get folks out of that mindset because they believe the rhetoric. I can honestly tell you, and you've heard me say this many times, one of the many agencies I would like to get rid of that are unconstitutional up in D.C. is the Department of Education.
Right.
There's a whole bunch of other ones that, you know, the Department of Energy, EPA, there's all sorts of things that are better done at the state level and where you have a more micro approach.
Well, I mean,
enumerated powers are wise. I always like to cite the enumerated powers. When somebody asks me what you stand for, those few things that are authorized to the federal government for the states, I'm a big fan of. If it's not, I call you an extremist. You've gone outside your authority. I believe the typical American would be stunned and amazed at how much their lives would improve if the federal government did those few things really well and got out of doing all those things that the central government has no business doing.
Well, I mean, I think philosophically we'd all agree with that, okay? But the practical attempt to try to get rid of the Department of Education, I mean, it just seems like Trump talked about it, but you see the Republican establishment, you know, they're not ready for that. So let's just assume for a second that the macro dismemberment of the outrageous approaches that they're taking is just not going to happen right away. But We have a border crisis. We have an FBI crisis with the FBI becoming weaponized. So can you talk about a couple of those things where you as a senator will have a voice to at least begin investigating what is going on and getting some things properly done, particularly within the constitutional framework of following the laws pertaining to immigration? I mean, it's no small matter that I think, you know, Biden could be impeached just on that.
Indeed. And your point's well taken, right? I mean, if I were elected, I'd have like one friend up there, maybe Rand Paul, but at least yeah. be more voices talking about small government. When I first started running for Congress back in the 90s, I said Roe v. Wade was unconstitutional, and folks looked at me like I was crazy. Well, I don't look quite as crazy now post-Dobbs decision. So
yes,
there's rays
exactly.
of hope.
Yeah.
Now, with respect to what you're talking about with the alphabet soup of stuff that we've accepted, the FBI, the NSA, the CIA, the TRS, all this gobbledygook of stuff. I mean, the Homeland Security is my favorite, or KGB, if you want to take down what the Soviet acronym is. When I read the Constitution, I see the difference between what's under the military authority and what's the civilian authority. So the FBI, and we now have over a century of history to watch just how insidious this organization has become. If the federal marshals, which should be dealing with all of this, needed more investigatory resources, you go before Congress and say, we need more appropriated. You don't set up another bureaucracy. Now, with respect to just understanding how seamless that would be, you'd have the federal marshals, they would be doing their investigations, and if something seemed to be problematic and it was a non-U.S. citizen, then you turn it over to ONI, Office of Naval Intelligence. And remember, the Constitution gives an ongoing appropriations for the Navy. If ONI is finding someone that appears to be a problem and worth investigation, and it's a U.S. citizen, they hand it over to the federal marshals. It should just be those two entities. You have these fiefdoms between the CIA, the FBI, the NSA. They're more worried about ATF. They're all worried about their own fiefdoms, Lou. How am I going to get my GS-16 raised?
Yeah.
The problem of that is it's not just wrong with respect to the theft. It's making our nation unsafe.
Well, let's talk about unsafety issues. This border crisis, okay? This is a problem because there are elements of the BCA that want borders open, okay? And as long as you're going to have open borders, it seems like you're not going to have control over who's coming in, and we've already seen terrorists being caught after, you know, passing through. So my question would be, John, what do you think is reasonable in terms of dealing with this question of Biden and the open border question, balancing obviously the immigration needs? We have to have, you know, people with green cards and all like that. What's your position on that?
Well, and obviously it's going to be different than BCA Brits. I mean, we're about to directly elect a lobbyist to D.C.
Yeah.
And if you want the more succinct version, I did a column at the Alabama Gazette entitled Toward a Rational Immigration Policy. So I'm going to try and sum it up as best I can. I'm an economist by trade, Lou, so I look at immigration as imported labor. It should be subject to the uniform tax just like anything else that was brought in. Unfortunately, we don't follow that in the Constitution. But so if you want to come in for 1 year, okay, whatever that imported labor value is, you pay the same as anything else that's coming in. And the Republicans like to give patent protection to corporations. It's usually about 17 years. If you pay that for 17 years, then you can be vetted and we can decide whether or not you're worthy of being a citizen. And if you want to pay the 17 years up front and decide whether or not you're worthy and do the vetting, fine. What I don't think people understand is that if you want someone to come into the U.S., there's costs associated with it. Someone has to pay with respect to being able to process them, if they come in with, you know, let's say, and we didn't follow it, you're somebody who's coming in from Wuhan, whether you're just a traveler or if you're someone who wants to be an immigrant, they should have been quarantined at the border for 10, 14 days, whatever was deemed as appropriate. You don't quarantine an entire nation. Now, here's where I think people think it's harsh. Well, if you love immigrants, I don't care who pays the tariffs for them to come in, as long as somebody's paid. We've got a whole bunch of folks, especially in academia, that pay tens of thousands of dollars to immigration attorneys, Lou. That doesn't help offset the cost of securing borders, processing,
right,
all the other things the federal government is actually authorized to do. And, of course, when I talk like this, people say, well, nobody thinks that way. Well, the problem nobody else thinks that way is because they don't look to the document for guidance.
Well, yeah, that's exactly one of the problems. But you see, I mean, when Trump had them, you know, all these folks just wait in Mexico while they go through the asylum process. And here again, we get back to, you know, the legal approach to handling it with asylum seekers, with people who are seeking a different life for economic reasons and all like that. I mean, all we're seeing right now is an invasion across the border. And it just seems to me that at least getting a grip on this with the wall and going back to something along the lines of, you know, waiting in Mexico or getting the Mexicans to stop people coming up from, you know, Central America or wherever, it seems to me that those are kind of common sense approaches to where we're not letting fentanyl get into the country as we are, and we're not letting these criminals, again, The criminal aspect of these individuals is that how many hundreds of Americans have been killed by these illegals? I mean, every day you read of something else, someone else either getting hit with a car or attacked in some crime and losing their lives. I mean, so I mean, the Brit approach to this is going to be, you know, if the BCA wants it, then she's going to go along with it. But it sounds to me like you are certainly not on that boat with her.
Oh, what they did to Mo Brooks was just absolutely stunning, and I don't think there's any race in America that's more illustrative of how all this is being bought and paid for by BCA type organizations. And I would love for Mo Brooks to come out and speak out against it. If I indeed win, he will be one of the first calls I make to help me and be on my chief of staff to bring his knowledge, wisdom, and, you know, almost perfectly aligned philosophy,
right,
with libertarians. Now, when you start talking about invasion, Lou, do you really want to wind me up that hard? I mean, I love the part of the Constitution where it says, you know, the federal government isn't doing what they're doing. The state has the sovereignty to address, to repel an impending invasion.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Don't get me wrong. I love what guys like DeSantis and, you know, Texas and some of these other states are doing. It's kind of a great PR stunt. But how about staying within the Constitution and saying, okay, guys, you're not doing it. If it's indeed an invasion, they have the authorization to repel it as governor and the every state legislature.
Well, I think that that's certainly something that has been talked about, and the degree to which they have not implemented that, you know, seems to be, well, I'm not really sure why they haven't done it, okay? It's certainly, well, first of all, you've got a Democrat governor in Arizona, so that's not going to happen unless we get a Republican. But Abbott and them have certainly mobilized their National Guardsmen, and they're doing what they can do, but it seems like they're not willing to go that further step, and I'm not sure what the answer to that is.
Forgive me, Lou, but I don't care whether he's a Democrat, a vegetarian, a Republican.
Right.
It's all been the same. We pretty much look at Shelby.
Yeah.
He was a big government Democrat. Now he's donning the red jersey, and I'm supposed to like him? There's no difference.
No, I completely agree. And that's one of the reasons why I've made this point to our folks down here. You know, I'm not voting for Ivy. I'm not voting for Britt. I want to vote for someone who can actually do the job. And I think just to go into the voting booth and just don't vote for anybody in those two categories, that's not sufficient for me. I think it's and I don't want to waste my vote on just a write-in, because it's a bridge too far, really. Whereas, well, you and Jimmy both have a real shot at doing something, because I think people are fed up with Ivy and Britt.
Amen. And Lou, I know I'm not really going out on a limb saying I'm the best, most qualified candidate of three, but I'm asking folks to vote for me, even if they don't like me and you think there are better candidates out there. They sure aren't on the ballot this time. So vote for me. And guess what? When they see some competition, other folks want to start getting on the ballot and providing some competition so that people will stop wasting their votes on Democrats and Republicans.
Yeah, that's exactly the case. Well, John, you know, I've got a few more minutes left. Do you want to just take a shot at any particular other issues that you have out there that you think are important that you want to really fight for when you're elected?
Well, if you don't mind, I'd like to follow up a little bit on what we were talking about with immigration. And, you know, I'm not a newcomer, Lou. I was taking my lumps back in the, you know, late 80s and 90s talking against NAFTA and GATT. And
right.
We were supposed to finance the federal government through a uniform tariff. When we get into the post-16th Amendment world, that federal income tax and all those federal rules that get embedded in the price of our exports makes what we're trying to sell to others more expensive. The problem is that much of what's coming into the U.S. now does not incorporate the cost of trade. So folks who talk about free trade, I almost want to scream. There are costs associated with providing and maintaining a Navy, dockyard maintenance and construction, all that stuff that's authorized correctly, in my opinion, to the federal government to do. So is it really that hard, if you get people to understand the document, pay attention to what's going on? The stuff we're trying to sell is artificially expensive. The stuff that's coming in is artificially cheap. Now, is anybody surprised about the ridiculous balance of trade we're observing?
Well, I mean, that's true, but I mean, when you're competing with the Chinese, who've used slave labor for any number of decades to be competitive, and you're right. I mean, that you have a built-in disparity in terms of, you know, the cost associated with producing things on the in the American, you know, market, and so how do you do that? And of course, tariffs has been, you know, blamed for the Great Depression and all like that, and maybe to a degree, the Holy Smoot tariff was a contributing factor to stifling
trade. It was the second highest tax in history, and I mean that's what the Republicans have been championing: high taxes and using it to redistribute wealth. There's a difference between tariffs to keep commerce regular and a tariff to redistribute wealth. And I mean,
right,
the Constitution, I think, sets a pretty good guideline. Now, once again, Lou, the kindred spirit, you really want to take me down the China path? Imagine if Nixon hadn't opened up China. How many decades ago do you think they would have imploded without Nixon aiding and abetting that?
Yeah, but it was really Clinton who opened it up, pushing her into the World Trade Organization, and then they did not enforce their own rules.
And all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
I'm absolutely, Clinton's just as bad. But if you want to talk about just China, they should have had to stew in their own juice. And it's one of Nixon's biggest mistakes, right up there with wage and price controls
and all
losing
that,
the gold window and other things. And he's a typical Republican.
Well, John, I'm really bumping up against the time thing here. So if people want to get in touch with you and Dr. Blake, how do we do that?
Yeah, and thanks again for having me on. The best place to go is www.lpa.org. And my website is Stop for Senate, SOPHFOR, the word Senate.com, and I'll have Jimmy finish out with his.
Well, listen, do me a favor.
Thank you, and of course, we would be happy to come on with you at any time in the future. If anybody has questions, you know, we're an open book and would be happy to talk to them. VoteLibertyAlabama.com is the website I'd like to direct people to. Vote Liberty Alabama. Lou, thanks again. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you, Jimmy. I appreciate that. Now, do me a favor, John. Can you give me, just text me your your information so I can get it out to our people too, okay?
Thank you, Lou.
Thank you both. Appreciate it very much. Thanks a lot. Okay, I've got 10:59. I don't even have to ask you for more time, do I?
No.
Oh, look out. We're doing good. The first 1 hour show, and it's on time. I love it. Okay, folks. You know, this election is not a given, in my view, that voting for Ivy and voting for Britt is going to save us from anything, okay? Britt has done nothing other than be labeled a rhino correctly, in my view. People have said, well, if we don't get her in there, the Republicans are not going to control the Senate. I don't think that's the case. I don't think Republican control of the Senate is at stake with voting her out, okay, or not voting for her and putting John Sophocles in. So with that, I will be here next week, and we'll have another hour to rant and rave. Take care. Have a great week. Bye.
Thank you, Dr. Lou. You've been listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou from the Common Sense Campaign. This program is brought to you by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne on 98 and in Malbus on 181 with a state-of-the-art car wash. If you missed part of this program, you can listen to it later at WABF1480.com. Now resuming regular programming. This is WABF, Mobile, Fairhope. Great music and memories.